here for our regular chat is Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
And how are you?
Very well. I mean, you've just seen the radar figures. And it's congratulations all round to the staff at Ellen Road, 247 Ellen Road, I hasten to add. And also thank you to all those people with such good taste that they're listening to us on a much higher regular basis than we thought we'd get.
Yes, I think we're all pretty pleased with the figures that came through. 71,000 KB on the first at Rajar. Maybe we're doing something right. Maybe this
from
chat
from a standing start.
From a standing start, and maybe this chat with between you and me on a Thursday is more popular than we thought.
Well, yes. On the other hand, maybe if we don't do it, we could double the figures. Who knows?
lots to get through as ever. Let's start with the big news at Leeds United this week, which is, of course, a new head coach in charge, which is the former Brentford and Wigan manager, Uwe Rosler. What were your thoughts on the comings and goings at Leeds United this week?
Well, they're very confusing, of course, because so many mixed messages were coming out. And I read the interview with Andrew Umbers in the YEP a couple of weeks ago, which he very, I think, cleverly, maybe very wise, he didn't say anything, knowing that his boss was sort of looking over his shoulder and on his way back. But then I also watched I caught the interview, the press conference with Massimo and the new guy, Mr. Pearson, and which in itself is a bit chaotic. And I don't know whether Massimo misread from the chanting of support of Redfern by the fans at Charlton, which Massimo took exception to. But I'm not quite sure whether he misread it, particularly when he said that, in effect, he thought that Redfern had orchestrated it, which, of course, as we know, he didn't, and managers can't. He knew they wanted to. I think I don't know where to start, really. We don't know why we don't know why Thompson was suspended and presumably now fired. There was a rumour, we've only got any rumour, that there were sections or cliques in the dressing room, and Thompson tried to break them up and couldn't. But if they won't tell us, we won't know. I thought Redfern did a magnificent job in very difficult circumstances. And again, I understand he's on holiday in Canada when he's learned that he's not getting the job there. I suspect you would have guessed that from last week anyway, in the interview in the Sunday newspaper. Would he go back to the academy job? That, of course, is a decision for him. He certainly did a first-class job in the academy when I was there. There was no reason to believe he'd stopped when I left. But on the other hand, with having that said about him, would he want to stay? And he's very experienced. He's well-known throughout the game. His performance would have been observed. And I would think that he will get more than one offer in the close season. And I suspect with proper backing and support, he will do a good job for somebody. And of course, if he goes, we lose Lucy as well. Lucy Ward, who's very, very good, both in training and her attitude to the kids, which gives them the right attitude on the pitch when they're playing. So, tumultuous times at Ellen Road, and not sure anybody can make any of it till the next season starts. And then, of course, we have another addition. Again, I'm only reading what I'm quoting what I read in the newspaper, but apparently there's a guy who was a good shop assistant in some shop in Miami, Florida. So he came over to be a shop assistant at the club store. And now he's player liaison officer, which makes you wonder where that leaf sticks, because he's had that job all season. so it's all confusing. And not helped by and not helped by the lack of information coming out of London Road itself. I did see that Massimo's complained that his wife and daughter are now going to live in London because of the abuse they've been getting on the street, and that is unfair. Irrespective of what people may or may not think of Massimo, he don't take it out on the family. But unfortunately, there is this thuggish, loutish, moronic, to use the word advisedly, behaviour, which has effect, much wider effects on a club than they realise it's having. In their 22nd of publicity, I'm tried. And I can sympathise with Massimo and his wife, who's a charming woman, and the daughter, who's also very intelligent. And I sympathise with them. They don't deserve that. And the people responsible should be ashamed of themselves. Though, of course, they won't have the guts to apologise, even on Twitter, where it's nice and anonymous. So, what's ahead? The short answer is we don't know. At least fair play has now been established. The transfer embargo has been lifted. But the manager, to be, we don't know what he's been doing the last few months, but I doubt he's been out scouting looking for players for these. So we'll start off with a denuded squad to be added to as we go along on an ad hoc basis. We can just hope. Fingers crossed. I have a phone call from a great lead supporter from Cape Town this morning. He's obviously following what's going on the internet. This is a man that spends money coming over every year to watch four games. And times it's where he attends all the dinners and all the awards and that sort of thing as well. And he's puzzled. But it just shows the worldwide interest there is at Leeds and the repercussions. So all you people that live on the internet and tweet and twat and YouTube and Facebook, moderate your views if they are of an extremist nature, because you may be affecting people who could be considering investing or sponsoring the club in some way, and you could influence them for good or adversely.
If we move away from, well, still linked with Leeds United, and of course it was a year ago on Monday that the former managing director of Leeds United, David Haig, was imprisoned in Dubai, and still in a Dubai prison after a year and still without any charge whatsoever. Your thoughts on that, KB?
Last Saturday, I had a meeting with two people who are very close to the situation and who briefed me on what's going on. I'm afraid some of it's confidential, so it has to stay confidential. But it is an absolute disgrace. The man has been there now for a year. He hasn't been charged with anything. He hasn't even been interviewed by the Dubai authorities. Any time he sees them is when he goes to court to try and get his money released so he can pay his expenses, including his lawyers. And he just refused point blank. And as his bail still establishes over £3.5 million. It's a disgrace. But what I can't understand is the head of the High Court in Dubai is an Englishman. Well, he's a Britisher anyway. What is being meted out to Haig is contrary to every principle of British justice. So what's going on there? Is there a conspiracy? We do know, you know, the way they behave is peculiar out there. There's an Australian who's wrongly accused of paying an $18 million bribe for some kind of deal, and he proved his innocence after 5 years. Then there's the man who's been only recently released, being charged with taking money from the Djibouti government. And, of course, David Hague's old, who he used to use, Gibson, Dunn and Moshe. One of the partners swore a false affidavit, had to apologise to the High Court in London. He's been suspended by Gibson Dunn. And he was acting, the same man, Peter May, was acting for GFH against Hague. So there's no credibility in this charge against Hague. If there is, why don't they produce it and put it on the table? Instead of just making noises in the background, like this Mr. Patel. Not the infamous Salim Patel. This one is even worse. An Indian who was brought in by GFH to oversee the financial side, and he's a man responsible for making all kinds of allegations. But one thing I did hear is that Deborah Ware, who works at Ellen Road, at Leeds United, is privy to a lot of the documents or paperwork that went on with David Hay. Now, if that's true, again, it's only speculation, then she should come forward and produce that if it's beneficial to his case. And he was, after all, her boss. She worked for him. Was very loyal to him at the time. But, of course, loyalty is sometimes transitory and doesn't last. It'd be interesting to see what would come out of that situation. Meanwhile, I mean, I'm enjoying my holiday, but I had a really good laugh yesterday because I'm flicking the TV channels, come an advert, and you'll love this, everybody. All 71,000 of you on climbing. Business-friendly Bahrain. You know, these days you see adverts for Qatar and Emirates and Indonesia and Ceylon, Bangladesh, places to go, places to invest. Business-friendly Bahrain. How can you be business-friendly if you're corrupt? If one of the biggest banks, so claimed, has a very questionable set of books, has very questionable valuations placed on its many assets, and don't forget, despite public claims they own 25% of Leeds, as far as I can work out, they only owe 2.75% of Leeds, so their investment is worth very little. Where there is the only state in the Gulf where there's still internal strife, because go outside the capital and the rebels and anti-establishment control the various villages. And where, as we've seen, they don't give a damn about their reputation or have no sense of honour or fair play for the way they're treating Hague. And if I was running GFH and I thought Hague had committed the things that I'd accused him of, I couldn't wait to get him into court, have his assets seized, not frozen, get my money back and see him in jail for good. But they're doing nothing. Funny that, isn't it? The only other funnier thing is that the British government do nothing to protect one of their citizens. They know about it in the papers. The local MP, Hague's local MP, drew attention to William Hague, no relation. William Hague just brushed it off. What's the consulate doing in Dubai other than attending all the cocktail party jollies that consulate people do? Yeah. Disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Well, moving on, KB, to other news. It's been a few weeks since the election now. I mean, it's come out this week. The economy's very much been in the talk this week because we've entered deflation, which I think sometimes can be looked at as an economy slowing down. But I think a lot of people having a look at that and thinking, well, it's a good time to buy things, basically, because you're not going to get products as cheap as you would usually. But your thoughts after a few weeks since the election?
Well, I mean, up the election, of course, is Labour Party banging about the working class, rather the working people should have been, because middle class also work, and so do upper class people as well, funny enough, and pay their taxes. But the point is that the kind of deflation we're having at the moment is very positive for everybody, because the price of food is down, the price of oil is down, they're taking foreign holidays, the pound is strong, the euro is weak, interest rates are near zero, shares, companies, publicly traded companies are paying slowly but steadily increasing dividends, which is good for pensions. So it wants a bit of a roll. What this government has to do, which he said it will do, and all the Labour Party want to do, is add on more taxes, more restrictions, more rigor, more this, that and the other. At the same time, expect people to work and invest and create jobs, which they won't. But for the next 5 years, well, the Tories have got the opportunity to take the kind of steps in the forthcoming budget and the laws they're talking they're going to pass, putting Great Britain on a roll as a United Kingdom with or without the Scots. They've got jumped up, bloated ideas of their self-importance, which they'll find out in the coming weeks has limitations. But what the pork thing is more of a simplification. I was reading yesterday's Mail, which demonstrates how, because of the complicated system on pensions, you can make between 50 and 250 savings on £1,000 by dodging in, dodging out. It should be necessary. There shouldn't be so many complications. It's very simple. These are the tax rates. This is the amount you can earn before you pay any tax. These are the rates, very few, 20 and 40. And there are no exemptions. There are no devices, some kind of tax coming. That may then put some of the accountants out of work or get them to diversify into helping running companies instead of avoiding tax. It makes things simple. I mean, all this banging about zero-hour contracts sounds a great thing. In principle, they put quite a lot of small companies out of business. And there was that tourist guide company based in... I think in York. He said, well, I can't guarantee that tourists are going to come along every day. If it's raining, they don't want to do a walking tour of York. So I can't employ people. He's got to pay them. When there's no customers, it will just shut down. So instead of five people earning some money, the five people earning no money. And what we've got to do is, they've got to, talked a lot about the benefits, they've now got to tackle them. Cameron made a promise which he didn't keep in the last government about immigration. A lot of the things that the coalition didn't do, the Tories have blamed or implied blame on the Liberals. Well, they can't do that anymore. They've no excuses. They've got a clear majority. They should now deliver what they said they would deliver. And I think we all had enough of seeing Cameron Osborne up there waddling around in high-vis jackets and white hard helmets. We see them laying bricks and making this and making that. We've seen them cooking in the kitchen, so we're sick of it. Leave that to James Martin, who's very good at it, and a Yorkshireman. Let's go on with running the country. Let go, sort out this human rights travesty. And let the unions be sorted out as well. And including the teaching unions. Let's get value for money. And Lord, I see that Francis Moore did a great job in the last government. Has now been given the same job for the next 5 years. Let him start sorting out the quangos and cutting down the red tape and sacking some of these people at the top. Keep reading, we haven't got money to pay nurses. We've got money to pay six-figure compensation to fat cats who aren't doing a very good job of running the top of the NHS. Now, and the other thing is, get on to your MP. Chase them. They're paid enough for their expenses, their pensions, and their terminal payments when they leave. Chase them. Ask them. Get them to account. Why aren't they doing this? What are they doing about that? Get local people must get involved in local things. And, of course, one thing, Mr. Cameron, let's have the devolution. Promise. You give to Yorkshire the same as you give to Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales. There's more people living in Yorkshire than in Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales. And what's more, being Yorkshireman, let's spend the money more carefully.
KB, once again, always a pleasure to be chatting to you. Have a good rest of your weekend, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
I'm not sure about the chatting. You didn't get a word in anyway, but maybe you've learned something.
Always. Thanks very much, KB.
Bye-bye.